Doctor?
I gotta bring it in. Sorry. I'm like, what are you guys gonna start or what?
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You're Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garrick. Plain, simple, Garrick.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell. Oh, I love a woman in uniform.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Listen to the Prophets, Deep Space Nine podcast on the Two True Freaks Network. I am, who am I? I am Dr. Bill Robinson, and with me is the two hosts of this show who graciously allowed me to come along again, and that is the producer, the man, the myth, the legend, Paul Spataro.
Hello.
And the master of Hey Kids Comics, Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
So how's it going, guys? We're ready to continue the search, part two.
Oh, very good.
The search is over.
You were right here all along.
Who sings that? Is that Survivor?
Yes, that's Survivor. I had to look that up because I couldn't remember this.
Proving that they have life beyond the eye of the tiger.
Mm-hmm. They had a lot of songs on there that I just forgot about. I was like, oh, yeah.
Did they? I wouldn't know offhand. But...
Chris, I don't remember what I looked at, but, you know, that's just me.
I'm impressed with myself that I remembered that was Survivor without having to look it up.
And Burning Heart. How could you forget that?
Oh, yeah, well, that was in Rocky IV. Mm. That was their follow-up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're here for the search part two, or as I like to call it, oh God, Odo, please don't smile, you're scaring the crap out of me.
Well, you know what, I think it's fitting, and we're gonna move at a slightly more brisk pace because we're a little time constrained today. But I'm gonna jump right into the Bible, because I think it's fitting that today's Bible entry would be on Odo. Mm-hmm. So I'll read that to you now. Alien male. Middle-aged, curmudgeon, and a shapeshifter. In his natural state, he is a gelatinous liquid. He was the Bajoran law enforcement officer for the space station under the Cardassians. Starfleet decides to have him continue in that role, since he's extremely savvy about the promenade and all who frequent it. His backstory: 50 years ago, with no memory of his past, he was found alone in a mysterious spacecraft that appeared near the Denoris asteroid belt. He was found by the Bajorans and lived among them. At first, he was sort of an elephant man, a sort of curiosity and humor as he turned himself into a chair or a pencil. Finally, he realized he would have to take the form of a humanoid to assimilate and function in their environment. He does it, but he resents it. As a result, Odo performs a uniquely important role in the ensemble. He is the character who explores and comments on human values, and because he is forced to pass as one of us, his point of view usually comes with a cynical and critical edge. He can't quite get it right, this humanoid shape, although he continues to try, so he looks a little unfinished in a way. He's been working on it a long time. Someone might ask him, why don't you take on the form of a younger man? His answer, I would if I could. He can only maintain his shape for about 6 hours before he must rejuvenate. This occasionally puts him and others in jeopardy. He has the adopted child syndrome of searching for his own personal identity and an inherent insecurity. What better metaphor could there be for an identity crisis than a shapeshifter? When the wormhole is discovered very close to where he was originally found, Odo realizes that the answers to a lot of questions in his life could be on the other side. Someday, he hopes, someone will come through the wormhole, perhaps even looking for him, and tell him who he is. Although he doesn't know anything about his species, he is certain that justice is an integral part of their being, because the necessity for it runs through every fiber of his body, a racial memory. That's why he became a lawman. And when it comes to doing his job, he doesn't always follow the letter of the law. The way he figures it, laws change, justice is justice. This puts him into conflict with our commander, who tells him he can't take the law into his own hands if he wants to stay on DS9. He has a couple of Bajoran deputies. He doesn't allow weapons on the promenade. And that's it for Odo. I think they stayed pretty true to that for the most part. And he's clearly the Spock, Data, Doctor, paradigm of Star Trek, that they have to have somebody who's trying to understand the human condition. Mm-hmm. So that's, Odo's filling that role. But I think they came up with a way in this one which is, very different from what they had done with Spock and Data, and allowed for a lot of storytelling. And obviously they took advantage of that, and we're starting to see that now. So, well done.
Yes. Yeah, they seem to follow. The thing with this Bible for Deep Space Nine is the characters have been quite fully formed from the beginning. There's a couple of minor variations as we've gone along, but I think they did a good job of setting out who they were going to be and what they wanted them to do right from the get-go.
Yeah, I think the only major difference out of that description was that I think he can go, 16 hours? More than 6 hours with his form.
Yeah, I don't remember what the exact number is, but yeah, I'm pretty confident it was more than 6.
Yeah. I don't think we have any new news from last time, so I think we're just going to jump right into the synopsis. And I am going to read the synopsis.
And you're going to read it without me making fun of you at all.
That's right, because you're going to mute yourself.
That's what I'm going to do, because I am going to be making fun of you.
I know you are. So,
they're savage rulers from the other side of the galaxy.
From now on, Bajor will be the Dominion's responsibility. They'll be running the station.
Now they're about to conquer our side.
I want to know why my chief of operations is lying in the infirmary while the Jem'Hadar who beat him is free to walk the station.
Does the station stand on the threshold of peace?
Halt!
Or Armageddon?
Prepare to launch photon torpedoes.
Next time on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
The Search, Part 2. Odo and Kira have landed on a lone planet in the Omarian Nebula, which they have discovered is Odo's homeworld. A female shapeshifter encourages him to begin the slow process of learning who he is and discovering the bond they share, known as the Great Link. Odo is pleased to be reunited with his people, but they don't like Kira because she's a solid life form. Meanwhile, forced to abandon the Defiant during the Jem'Hadar attack days before, Sisko and Bashir are traveling alone in a shuttle when O'Brien and Dax, who have met the Founders, rescue them. Huh? Upon returning to the space station, Sisko learns that the Federation is negotiating a peace treaty with the Dominion, represented by one of the Founders, Borath. When Sisko finds out that the Romulans have been excluded from the peace talks, he expresses his concern to Admiral Nechayev, but she dismisses his fears. On the other side of the wormhole, Kira is unable to contact Sisko because of interference from a hidden power source, while Odo struggles with his lessons at shapeshifting. Later, the female shapeshifter tells Odo that they came to this secret planet a long time ago as a result of persecution at the hands of the Solids. Then reveals he was sent as an infant to explore the galaxy, then return home. While looking for Odo, Kira discovers a locked door, something for which shapeshifters would have no use. This arouses her curiosity. Back on the space station, a Jem'Hadar soldier starts a fight with O'Brien, in part because the newcomers have been given free rein. Sisko then discovers that the Federation has signed a treaty, agreeing to give control of the Bajoran sector, including the station and the wormhole, to the Dominion. Bah, bah, bah. Over Sisko's objections, he and the crew will be reassigned. A happy Odo tells Kira that he has decided to remain with his people, but Kira asks him to help her get to the hidden power source before she departs. He is intrigued when Kira reveals it is behind the locked door she has found. Meanwhile, Jem'Hadar soldiers shoot Romulan officer T'Rul in cold blood, then attack an outraged Sisko. Deciding that matters have gotten out of hand, Sisko then bands with Garak, Dax, Bashir, and O'Brien on a suicide mission to steal a runabout, collapse the wormhole, and keep the Dominion on its side of the galaxy forever, or at least 70 years. Garak is killed while Sisko and the others escape. Once aboard the runabout, they fire on the wormhole, collapsing it in a blinding explosion. Meanwhile, Odo unlocks the mysterious door where he and Kira find Jem'Hadar soldiers waiting. The two are taken to an interrogation room where Sisko and the Defiant crew sit with their eyes closed, devices attached to their heads. Borath is there, revealing that he is really a Vorta, conducting a virtual reality simulation on the crew to determine how much they will sacrifice to avoid war with the Dominion. The female shapeshifter then arrives, disclosing that her people are the mysterious Founders. Saddened that his own race is responsible for so much death and misery, Odo demands that his friends be released, then chooses to return with them. Surprised that their experiences since the Defiant attack didn't really happen, Sisko and the crew head back to the station. Knowing the truth about his people, Odo realizes now that even though he may feel like an outsider, his place is with his friends. Roll credits. So, the big reveal, which we actually kind of said last episode, is that the shapeshifters are the Founders. But, you know, the show's been out for a long time, so we kind of knew this was coming. And if anybody's listening to this, I'm not quite sure they're listening to Deep Space Nine for the first time. So, yeah. Here they are, the shapeshifters. And I just have to say, I was a little disturbed by the whole alien merging there. hey, whoa, what's going on there?
Great link, you mean.
Well, no, I'm talking about the particular scene where
Odo and Salam Jens get it on.
Oh, yeah, that whole, one big undulating column of shapeshifter love. Ooh.
Is that a problem?
I got no problem with it, but, I might have to cover, the kids' eyes during that scene. It was just
don't want them seeing some early, early CGI morphing technology going at them.
Yeah. It was okay. It wasn't that great, but yeah, it was I had forgot that this was a simulation when I was watching this last night. So but I knew something wasn't right. I'm like, wait a minute, this can't be. Yeah, but especially when Quark did. Okay, was Quark quoting MLK, Dr. King, when he's like, "I have a dream." One day,
yeah, it was his version of it. Yeah,
I'm just sitting there going, "Wait, what?" And even O'Brien kind of looks at him like, "Huh?" And the whole keeping the Romulans out, and then once they got to the whole "we're gonna reassign you," I'm like, "All right, something's not right here. This is not." And then I think it started to come to me, "All right, this is not actually happening," because it didn't make sense, like how they would even get away.
Yeah, they kind of left that kind of unexplained.
And how did, you know, it just, none of it made any real sense. So I knew something, it just wasn't passing the sniff test for me, which I was right, because then they were all in just a simulation.
I would say I had a very, very similar experience to you as far as that went. I forgot that it was a simulation and something didn't seem quite right about it. I couldn't put my finger on it totally. But I loved the aspect that it did turn out to be a simulation, because what they did was they showed that the Dominion not only have us kind of outgunned as far as the technology goes and possibly as far as manpower goes, but they also are, strategists. They're not going to just burst in guns a-blazing. They're going to figure out what our strengths are, what our weaknesses are, what our characters are like, you know, what character flaws we have. And you know, their whole thing was to test to see how far, you know, the Federation would go to avoid conflict. And if they could push that to the limit, then they do that rather than waste their resources fighting us. They would just kind of do it another way. But in this instance, they found out that, you know, sooner or later we would hit a breaking point, or that certain people would lead us to a breaking point. So now they know, okay, that's not a legitimate strategy that we can follow. And I really thought that was just a great aspect of the show. I thought it was very, very well thought out. I think it was somewhat different, even though, you know, you've seen simulated things before, but I thought it was different from what I've seen in stories like this before, that they would try that first.
Mm-hmm.
So I really enjoyed that. I thought that was just excellent.
Well, this is a lot different than how the Borg, the other big bad of the Star Trek universe, would operate, because it was just through the Borg were more just through overwhelming numbers and blunt force, whereas this is, they do have numbers and technology, but they have finesse, they have strategy, so to speak. strategery, yes, as George Bush would say.
What'd you think, Andy?
I really liked this one until we got to the "it was all a dream" bit, because I was really like enjoying. No, I always think that's a cheat, and that's largely because Gerry Anderson did this on every one of his shows. There's an episode of UFO that's all a dream. There's an episode of Space 1999 that's all a dream. Captain Scarlet, I think, did one. And you get to the point where if something really dramatic is happening, you know what's gone wrong. You go like, all right, something's going on here. And I was buying into this and really enjoying it up until they killed Garak. And then you're like, right, this is it. This is all an illusion, isn't it? And I expected the buttheads from the cage to show up. So that kind of...
the assheads.
The assheads, yeah. That kind of soured me on it a little bit, because I just don't like that story trope. I got what they were going for, and I was quite impressed with what they were going for, but that just takes a point off for me. But overall, I do like it when you think the story's going in one direction and it's actually going in another. And this is not about what we thought it was about, it's actually about Odo. So that was clever. And I did like Sisko's anger with Nayachev. It's always brilliant when Avery Brooks gets to do anger. But I do wonder, because I don't remember going forward, he gets promoted in the illusion. So isn't he a captain? When does he get promoted to captain properly?
I don't remember.
Is that at the end of the season?
I'm not sure. I think so, but we'll have to stick around and find out. See, I didn't think it was really that much of a cheat, because I did think, as Bill was said, I think there were things all along, and I can't put my finger on exactly what they were, and you can't point to the Garak killing, because if you were watching this when it first came out, you don't know that Andrew Robinson's going to stay on the show.
Right.
So the killing could legitimately happen. They probably didn't focus on it enough for you to feel it was real. But other than that, there were feelings all along that this doesn't feel right. This isn't quite right. So I didn't think it was a total cheat, because it didn't just come out of the clear blue.
Well, like the way when Eddington is acting as the security officer, the way they just let the Jem'Hadar have the run of the station. Bullcrap. I call it bullcrap. I don't care how politically correct you want to be with a visiting, you know, almost occupation force on the station, that you're just going to let them have free run and do what they want. That's what I was like.
Including
yeah,
Big Miles in the hospital.
Yeah, I'm like, this is not adding up. Something's not right here.
Excuse me. Yeah, no, I agree with you when you look at the whole context. Just that one, it was a really exciting action scene, and you do get the point in Star Trek where when they do a really exciting action scene like that, something's wrong. And just once I wanted to do something really pulse-pounding and original series-y, and it not turn out to be an illusion or whatever. So, and it was nice to see Garak again, because he's very, very good in those scenes.
Well, he got to get a good death scene.
Yeah, and he's got that brilliant line about, well, I pretend to be their friend, when in fact I'm going to shoot you.
It's whoosh, ah!
Which was great.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm not... I'm, I'm not completely down on it at all. I think it was a really good episode, but I always have, you know. It's growing at watching Gerry Anderson stuff. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's the I guess that's the problem with it, is you see it as kind of a trope instead of in any way unique. Mm. Whereas I thought, like I said, I think, you know, Bill talked about how the Borg are a blunt instrument in the way they're presented. And I thought up until this point, that's the way we've seen the Jem'Hadar. Mm-hmm. So to see them show restraint, and we learn later on, you know, we get a little bit more depth to what the Jem'Hadar are, that, you know, they are kind of a blunt instrument. So it's really the Dominion pulling the strings behind them that creates this subterfuge. But I liked the subterfuge in it. I thought the purpose of it really made sense. That, like I said, before they commit their resources to just go like a bull in a china shop and go across the wormhole and try and take over there, let's see if we could take over, you know, a little bit with a little bit less force and a little bit less energy and a little bit less, you know, depleting of our own resources.
Yeah, you know, how far are they willing to go? You know, what... How far can we push them? You know, that's what they wanted to see. And obviously, Sisko would go pretty far.
Yeah.
And Sisko wouldn't go as far as others. You know, ultimately...
No, Sisko's, you're not taking me without a fight, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, even though he's being told by the... You know, in his mind, the command that he, you know, he should stand down. Eventually, he's had enough and says, "I don't care what you say. I'm not allowing this. I'm gonna destroy the wormhole, and it doesn't matter what it cost me. It could cost me my life. I'm not letting this happen."
Yeah. Yeah, because one of the other things is that they were in this simulation. The Federation was completely going to abandon Bajor to the Dominion, and just back out completely, which you just can't see that. And, you know, not having the Romulans in the discussion, which would risk a war, you know, that's just like, wow, this is really, yeah, just wasn't adding up.
Which, again, to me is why it doesn't feel like a total cheat, because it didn't add up. And then you say, okay, now I understand why it didn't add up, because mm-hmm. it wasn't real. You know, they got certain things wrong.
Right. Well, yeah, because they don't have... Well, I mean, I don't know how that whole thing was working. Were they pulling... I guess they have to pull the stuff out of their minds and then throw it together in a blender and then spit it back to them to make them all...
They use it by science.
Yeah. Science!
All right, fair enough.
We did get first time we hear the word... The reference to... non-changelings as solids, and I think I'm probably a little too solid. At least maybe
I see myself as gelatinous, so
I'm a gelatinous solid, I guess is what I am. And that I guess the changelings have a very long lifespan, because there's a mention of Odo wasn't due to be back for 300 years on his little walkabout when he's having the I guess we should get into the shapeshifters themselves and the whole Great Link, the big gold oozing Photoshop body of water.
Well, you know, my first thought is I'm not sure about the merits of their plan, in that they sent all of these, I guess, baby shapeshifters out into the galaxy with no knowledge of who they are or whatever, to let them develop and then eventually be drawn back by instinct to the Great Link so that they could learn about what's going on in those corners of the galaxy.
Well, no,
that makes sense in and of itself, but clearly they have their own spies on the Federation side, because they have all this knowledge already of what's going on and everything. So which was their plan, kind of thing? Or did the wormhole arising change how they were going to execute their plans?
I think it changed it, because I think that their long-term in-game plan, if they have such long lifespans, if they're sending out the the infant changelings, basically they would be like a blank slate, and they send them out to other, you know, they meet other races, and they, like Odo, they kind of imprint on that race and learn what it is to be that race, that civilization. Then they come back, they merge with the Great Link, and they can absorb that knowledge into the Great Link and understand everything. Whereas they can't do that with intermediates like the Vorta, because the Vorta can't merge with the Great Link, so they can only get the information secondhand. So I think they have like two schemes. They have the more immediate end game, which is to control the area around them with the Vorta, but then they send out the infant changelings as long-term reconnaissance to bring back the information and absorb it directly. That's just my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that as their long-term plan, but I think you have to add to that that the arising of the wormhole changed their long-term plan. Because otherwise it doesn't make sense that they would have their spies feeding them information already. They would have just waited for Odo to come back, and they would have all the information they needed. But I guess, yeah, you know, the wormhole, now all of a sudden there were now proximity differences that didn't exist before. And in their own way, they consider the Federation to be a threat to them, because clearly the shapeshifters are a very paranoid race. And that's why they've created the Dominion and taken over that area, because they had previously been hunted and killed. So their method of combating it was initially to create isolation, but then beyond the isolation, they're taking over everything around them so that they won't feel threatened.
Right, to give them like a buffer zone to keep everybody away. You know, I'll control all this area so that nobody can get into me.
And then that's expanded to the point where they just want to control everything.
Mm-hmm.
All of that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Science. Oh, wait, no, that would be psychology.
Oh. Not one of them.
We don't have a resident psychology expert for the show. We have our science expert.
Ooh, could I be the... No, I'm just kidding.
You're the Mountain Dew expert for the show.
Oh.
You can be the psychology expert if you want.
It would be cool if there is somebody who's a regular listener who is a trained psychologist or psychiatrist who could give us some sort of insight into motivations like that, and whether or not our take on it as amateurs has any merit in, you know, if it makes sense from their perspective.
I mean, I guess you could even maybe, this might be a stretch, compare to things that are happening today. You could look at it as somewhat countries that are concerned of immigration. You know, the founders could be like the host country, and then people coming in from the outside, they don't want these different people here, so they want to control everything, and they don't want to let these people in. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of I don't think that's a stretch. But
no, I think it's a valid way of looking at it.
I think that works.
On a lighter note, I mentioned before we got into this that there was a cartoon reference that popped in my head while watching the show. And as soon as when Kira comes back to the little area where Odo had been trying to practice turning into different things, and it was kind of funny because she was talking to different things like trees, some little rock. Well, yeah, you know, I guess we did see foliage. There was some type of plant thing there on the ground. She's like, I don't even know if you're really here. And then suddenly a buzzard flies in, and I thought of the cartoon buzzard, My Little Keela.
Don't wanna.
No, I don't wanna be in the Founders. No. Because really, he's a buzzard. I'm like, come on, he's a buzzard. Oh, what? Yeah. Anyway. Odo would make a great lock picker, I guess, with the little... with the fingers in to open the door. He had to, like, stick three things into the door to open it.
Ew.
Digits?
He'd be a good thief, is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes, yes. Among other things, he would be very popular with the ladies.
He'd be... Oh, dear me.
Sorry, I guess... He's popular with the other changelings.
Yeah, they all want to link with him. True. Everybody wants to link with Odo.
Okay.
Except
we haven't
really...
mentioned Jonathan Frakes directed this one.
Oh, yes, yes. Was this what he'd already been directing? Not Deep Space Nine.
This would be before
Next Gen.
This would be before First Contact came out, which is his first movie that he directed.
Right.
But he did direct episodes of TNG.
Right.
Yeah, he was already working on Next Generation when this, because this is Next Generation is off the air now. Mm-hmm. So he's already directed episodes of The Next Generation before he came over to do this. And it's one of three or four that he'll do this year. I can't remember which. And he will make an on-camera appearance this year as well.
Yeah. Never mind. I'll be quiet about that. Wait till you get...
Yeah, we've got that to look forward to in a couple of weeks' time.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I had forgotten all about that one until you just mentioned it.
So that's going to be nice to do.
Yes,
go on.
He does make an appearance as a Riker, and that's all I'll say.
Yes.
Just to go back to the episode, from a plotting point of view, this one has what I've seen. I've seen it many times in comic books, where ultimately they're successful in being safe at the end of the episode, but they didn't win anything. Basically, they're safe because the shapeshifters respect the fact that Odo is one of them enough to just allow them to go home.
Yeah, because really,
otherwise they all just would have died.
Yeah.
So they...
Well,
there's
that one line in it. It's like, ape will not kill ape.
Yeah.
Shapeshifters do not kill shapeshifters.
But that's the only reason that they're able to go home when it's over. The odds were overwhelming against them, and they didn't come up with some MacGuffin of, oh, this is how we turned it around because Miles O'Brien used science to give us this weapon. There's none of that. It's we could kill you in a heartbeat if we want, but since you're with Odo, we're going to let you go.
Speaking of going home, I have one nitpick. So at the end of the episode, when they say, okay, you're free to go, Sisko hits his comm badge and says, Defiant, blah, 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 beam us up.
Computer.
So the computer beamed them up?
That's what I took it as.
I know. I was kind of like, wait a minute, who's up there to beam them up? I mean, and if there is people up there, our crew, because I'm assuming there's other people on the other crewmen on the ship. Maybe they're not all dead.
I think there was a limited crew on the Defiant. I don't think it's nearly the crew that you'd have on, say, Enterprise.
Well, yeah. But I was still just thinking, wait a minute, who's going to beam them up?
I think it's the Defiant version of Siri that beams them up.
No, yeah. And it'll misunderstand you and beam you into space. I'm sorry, you said beam you into space. No!
But that's what I took it as. Either that or there's unknown, crew members on the ship that have nothing to do with the story who we don't ever need to see and they don't need to pay extra paychecks to.
Yeah, but
they've got one guy in the engineering room that we never see and he just lives in there.
But I would hope he was under armed guard, but man, maybe the... Yeah, all right, I'll let it go. But it just bugged me last night. I was like, what? What? Shouldn't you all be, being held prisoner at the moment?
Yeah. Well, that's what I believed, so... And anybody else who was in the crew, they just kept in a different room. Because they didn't matter.
Because they didn't want to pay them.
You kidding me? We got to pay them scale. Jem'Hadar doesn't have that kind of muscle anymore.
Do we have anything else on this?
It's funny, for an episode that I really liked, there's not a lot to break down in it, because it is a fairly simple story.
Yeah, they've mostly just used it as setup from last time and then just expanded on that. There's not really a lot more going on from what we got in the first episode. It really is essentially the part two of that story and wrapping up a lot of those loose ends while still leaving a lot of them left dangling for what they will pick up as they go further down the line. And a lot of this is much further down the line. We won't see the Founders again for a while. The Jem'Hadar don't become a weekly threat, so we're not going to see them again for a bit. So it is just setting up the slight change in direction for the show.
Yeah, it's established now. You know, they started with the Jem'Hadar as establishing them as a credible threat. Now we're seeing the puppet masters who are pulling the strings, and it's taking it a step further. So now I think it's beyond a legitimate threat, and now it's, you know, created kind of a potential nemesis. But rather than just dive into that and make, okay, this whole series is going to be about this, they kind of let it be a little bit more of a slow burn. So I think it's well done. I don't have any problem with the fact that we didn't just go right into it again. And the response to that is,
A resounding filled the room.
You know, I think you know, from a character study, we do see, okay, how far can they push Sisko before he's going to say, screw it, I don't care, which we talked about a little bit. We see Odo and how he's conflicted with learning about his past and trying to acclimate not only what they're telling him, but what he has felt individually. And I do think we're going to see some inconsistencies on how the Great Link works as far as the sharing of thoughts and all of that, because I think it changes a little bit as the show goes on, but we can always explore that as it happens. You know, we've seen now a lot as far as compared to what we had previously as to what, you know, where Odo comes from and what he's all about, and you know, that's a pretty interesting aspect of this episode that's going to be, you know, continue to be developed as it goes on. So there is a lot here, you know. We've discussed it in kind of short order,
right?
I hope we're not paying it short shrift here.
But maybe because, like Andy said, it's kind of a cheat in that a lot of the stuff we see doesn't matter.
But the stuff with Odo does. All the Odo stuff was real.
Right, so that's half the episode. So maybe that's why we're kind of done with it already, because it's just that one, you know, only half of the episode really mattered. I mean, yeah, it showed some, you know, how the characters would react in a certain situation, but we kind of know that about them already anyway. So really everything that happens that is meaningful is on the Odo side. And the other side's just, you know,
Something that is kind of unclear at this point, and I think maintains a little bit of lack of clarity even as it goes on, is with the Great Link, are the shapeshifters a collective like the Borg, where they all share one mind effectively, or are they individuals who just kind of, you know, merge once in a while?
That's the way I see it, that there are individuals that they can share information if they want, but I think they can hold stuff back too.
Because we really only hear from the one female shapeshifter in this episode. We don't get any perspective from anyone else.
We get the one tall male shapeshifter in the background, who, by the way, trivia, played the albino in the Chevy Chase Goldie Hawn movie Foul Play. He is not actually an albino.
William Frankfurter?
Yes.
It's nothing but a hot dog.
I thought it was Frank Father.
It is.
All right. Duh.
But when your name is that close to Frankfurter, I mean, you can't.
It must be good. Sorry, that's another Frankfurt joke.
As Humphrey Bogart said, a hot dog at the ball game is as good as a steak at the Ritz.
What is that from? All I remember is
it was a commercial for baseball in the 1950s.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, they've replayed it over the years. I'm sure it's on YouTube if you look for it.
So, you want me to give a rating?
Yep.
If you like.
Maybe I won't Maybe I won't do a point this time. I don't want to be a one and be an I or an idiot, as you called me last time.
I didn't call you an idiot. I said the rating.
It looked like
an idiot built into it.
I'm kind of torn because I don't know if I want to give it a 4, maybe a little lower, because it kind of was, half of it didn't really matter in the scheme of things. I think I'm going to give it, I'm going to give it a 3.75, just because it was good. What?
I don't want to give it a 0.1 because, you know, but I'll give it a 0.75.
Do we do points?
Do we do halves on this show?
I don't remember.
Oh, I screwed it up a long time ago. Poor Sean, back in the day when I gave
it. Back when you gave one of them, you rated one of them as pie.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 3.75.
Okay. You or me, Andy?
I'll give it a 3. I'm knocking a full point off for that. It was all a dream reveal. You made excellent points, the pair of you, but it's still getting a 3.
I like when I can win you over. Not just say I make excellent points, but didn't change your opinion at all. So I feel like I
failed. No, it was very much, oh, come on.
See, I didn't feel that way. I felt like it was... I like the aspect of it being strategic by the Dominion. And showing them to be more developed than just a blunt force. I really like that. That there's something more to them, that they have more depth than that, and that this is a threat that's not going to be just, you know, one on strength alone. So I actually had no problem with the cheat at all. And as I said, since there were things about it that didn't seem right as it was going along, that characters not acting the way you'd expect, I felt like that was clues to the fact that it was there anyway. And as long as there are clues, I feel like it's not really a cheat. It's when you do, you know, a whole season and then you have Patrick Ewing wake up in the shower. You know, that's a cheat. But this I thought was okay, and I didn't really have a problem with it. And to me, I enjoyed this pretty much on a par with the same with the episode that went before it. So I'm going to go with the same 4.0 from me.
Okay.
All right.
Do we have time to throw in a quick email before we...
I really got to shoot off.
All right, so we're going to save... We only have one piece of email. We'll save it for the next show.
Save it for next time.
And so Andy, sorry we're giving you a short one this time, but what are we going to get next time?
Next time on an all new episode, it's the House of Quark. It's a Quark show. Cool.
That may have been the least enthusiastic next time I've ever heard.
I'm going to shoot. I've got to go.
Andy's got to go to the bathroom, everybody. Sorry, we got to go. But we'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you next time.
See ya.
All right. And we're out.
And we're done.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
The search is over. Oh man, that was horrible. I just massacred.
You were in the bathroom all the time.
Exactly, thank you.
You can carry a tune this early in the morning.
Who can carry a tune?
Both of you two could actually pull that off at this time.
I don't think either of us pulled off anything.
The search is over. Okay, that's better. That's a little better. I'm not quite... Mimi, la, la. Okay, there we go.
Better be subjective, obviously.
Yes.
We were just talking about Deadpool. You seen Deadpool?
No, I haven't.
Sucked.
Nah, it wasn't that bad, was it?
No, we both pretty much agreed. It was a good movie that we enjoyed, but it's not the end all and be all that people are writing it up as right now. It was good. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was funny. But it wasn't a classic or anything. And, you know, there's nothing about it beyond all of that that makes it stand out as being, like, the greatest Marvel movie. And it's technically, as Andy pointed out, not even a Marvel movie.
Right.
Well, I know everybody's like, oh, my God, it's a rated R movie. It's a rated R superhero movie. I was like, where were you when Blade came out? Hello?
And the Crow.
Now, as far as that goes, you know, Melissa wanted to go see it.
And Judge Dredd.
And she's seen... you know, she's seen quite a few. You know, she saw Jessica Jones. So I'm not really too concerned about her seeing an R movie. But then people sort of said there's nudity in it, there's sex scenes in it. And honestly, there was. But it wasn't particularly graphic as far as any of that goes.
No, the violence was a bit more graphic, but it was Deadpool.
The violence was graphic, but it was so over the top that it was cartoony.
Hmm.
So I honestly, ultimately, sitting there in the theater watching it with my 15-year-old, I didn't have any concerns about her, you know, being upset by it or being exposed to something that was going to be a problem for her. So I think that's been a little overstated by people as well.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of excitement from certain quarters regarding this particular film that I didn't think it warranted. But maybe we've just watched stuff that has a lot more violence and sex in it than they have.
Maybe. But I think we're getting to the point where superhero movies should be... Not every superhero movie should be treated as, you know, okay, you know, the industry is going to rise and fall on this movie now. We have enough of them now that it should be like, you know, is it a good movie or not? And that should really be the issue.
Yeah, I'm getting really fed up of reading clickbait articles about how Deadpool's changing movies, the superhero movies, forever. And I'm like, no, it isn't. And it doesn't deserve to.
It's not, because I think it's a very specific and isolated movie. I don't think you could start making superhero movies like this, because that breaking the fourth wall thing would get old really fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works for him. See, in this particular film, I don't think they did that enough. I don't think they subverted the comic book origin superhero movie enough. I felt Kick-Ass did it better, to be honest with you.
Hmm. Yeah, you may be right. But, you know, I mean, the bottom line, as I said to you before, for me, was when I watched the movie, I sat there, I laughed a lot, I enjoyed it, and the hour and 40 minutes went very quickly.
Hmm. Yeah,
that makes it a good movie as far as I'm concerned. I you know, when I was asked by one of my buddies, you know, what I thought of it, I said 3 stars.
Yeah, like I said before Bill came on, I think we're both in pretty much the same place to that. I think it's everybody else's opinions of it that's more, I'm going, really? Did you watch the same film I did? Essentially, it was just moonlighting with, you know, sex and swearing in it.
But it goes to what I've complained about so much in the last couple of years, that it's the internet. Everything has to either be the greatest or the worst ever. Nothing can just be okay.
You can't come out and say, yeah, I had a good time there, and then we went for pizza and everything was fine.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets me a little, you know, really.
I read an article last night that was dealing with how, it was the one that was on Facebook saying that, you know, about don't worry about Batman versus
Man-Thing.
Cool. That one I'm looking forward to.
I would watch that one.
Well, see, Batman could fight him because he doesn't have any fear. So...
And whoever knows fear.
Yeah.
And Green Lantern.
Hmm. Anyway, saying that Batman versus Superman would be, you know, don't worry, it'll do fine in it. I was trying to fall asleep, and it actually worked rather well because it went into the whole background about how all the tie-ins and the other economic things that'll come with the movie, and that it would, like the only way that the movie could tank, quote-unquote, is that it would have to only take in, like, $350 million or something like that domestically, which you know it's going to take in more than
that. It'll tear that over its opening weekend, probably.
Yeah, so, and this other feeling that everybody, you know, something has to fail because I don't like it. Well, I mean, I don't have to watch it if I don't want to see it. I don't care. I've got other things to worry about, whether or not a superhero movie rises or falls.
Well, that's, I mean, that's like kind of Scott's point of view on it, is he wants it to fail because he doesn't like this vision
right.
of the DC universe, and he feels like unless this fails, they're going to continue this vision.
But that's not going to happen.
Probably
not. I just don't think it's going to happen. You know.
Well, that's why I threw in the post. You know, wouldn't you really prefer that it surprises you by being great?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not optimistic in thinking that Scott would ever like it. But wouldn't that, you know, wouldn't you rather that be the big surprise, that it turns out to be something you do like?
Yeah, I was describing the latest trailer to him, and he's like, But yeah, he's not going to see it, so.
He's not going to, and I don't blame him for not seeing it. He's seen enough that he knows he doesn't like this, and that's okay. I don't question that.
Yeah, just like
yeah,
I'm not going to.
I honestly think if the Superman that was in that Man of Steel movie was in the comics, I'd be reading the comics.
Well, you know, we went on the record with that whole breakdown of Man of Steel, you know, basically scene by scene. So our opinions on that are pretty well known. Assuming anybody actually listened.
It was views from the long box. Thousands of people listened. We actually got
I listened.
Feedback on that, to be honest with you. Yay! There you go, one listener.
I watched the movie.
I didn't think the movie completely sucked. I thought it was perfectly entertaining for what it was.
Yeah, there are things that I have issues with in that movie. I'm sure there are going to be things that I'll have issues with it in this movie. I doubt it will be the perfect movie.
Paquette being stupid.
Yeah. that's probably my biggest problem with that.
I'm good. Save yourself. I'm just going to let this tornado kill me. Save the dog.
For no reason.
Yeah. Other than it was meant to be. Whatever. Go play.
I am more excited for Civil War, I'll be honest with you. But I think that's more that they've built up to this more naturally than they have Superman versus Batman. I can't help but think if Man of Steel had been a $1 billion success, we would now be having Man of Steel 2, not Batman versus Superman.
Mm-hmm. So well, there's already talk now about a solo Ben Affleck movie.
Yeah.
Batman.
I
don't know that I need that.
I don't know that they need to do one. They should really be expanding the rest of the franchise, really, to be honest with you. I mean, who'd have thought anyone would be excited over an Ant-Man movie, but they pulled it off.
They pulled it off, but by their accounting, it was not a success financially.
Why not?
By Marvel's accounting, it didn't make as much money as they wanted. I don't remember what the dollar and cents amount.
Well, you've got to... I don't know about that. It didn't make as much money as I wanted versus how much did it actually make.
Yeah, well, that's
what was
I don't know what it made.
No, but what was that report that Avengers 2, despite nearly doing $1 billion, wasn't considered a success?
Exactly.
Yeah. So,
and it boiled down to that. It didn't make what they wanted it to make. Well, that's a completely different criteria. That's you being greedy.
Yeah.
That's not, it wasn't a success.
But that's the point. It didn't make as much as they thought it would or hoped it would. So perhaps they're going to say, we don't need to make a sequel to this. Let's see if other properties are more profitable.
I thought they'd already greenlit Ant-Man 2.
I had not heard that, but it's possible. You know, they don't call me.
Did you see the Ant-Man, the Ant-Man Hulk commercial?
Yes,
yes,
I thought that was very entertaining.
That was brilliant.
The only thing I was saying, I said during the commercial as we were watching it, was I kind of envisioned that as soon as Hulk got the drink and he was about to take a sip from it, a web would come down and pull it from his hand.
That would have been brilliant.
I said this is where they're gonna reveal Spider-Man, and they didn't.
That would just mess with everybody's heads, wouldn't it? That the Marvel Universe version of Spider-Man was released in a Coke commercial.
But then you wouldn't even have to show him. You could have just had Webb come down and take it.
Yep.
And then you could have had, like, maybe that you see in a distance, you see him swinging away, but you really can't see, you know,
yeah, you don't
details.
See anything. If he's swinging against the sun, you just see a silhouette or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been awesome. It was a good commercial, huh? It was a very entertaining commercial.
But they didn't do it. They didn't consult me. They didn't do what I wanted.
They're missing out, though.
They are. I wonder, like, to what extent they mine the minds of comic fans in pre-production. You know, they seem to just get, you know, they latch on to some of these writers. You know, Fantastic Four did such a wonderful job of getting Mark Miller to be their consultant on it.
Well, if I remember correctly, Bryan Singer didn't even know who Mark Miller was. So that's the amount of consulting that he did on the X-Men movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bryan Singer made no bones about it that he was not a comic book fan.
Yeah, it shows.
As did who directed Fantastic Four. He came right on set. He never read the comics.
What is that, Josh Trank?
Josh Trank.
Yep. Which also showed.
Oh, yeah.
See, the problem I've got at the minute, this is the extent of my problems. This Patreon thing for Fantasticast is going so phenomenally well. And thank you, everyone who gives money and everything, but...
So why do we have one for this?
I don't know.
I want money.
Why have you never set one up? Yeah, but the problem I'm going to have is we're only something like $50 a minute away from me having to watch that shitty movie.
The Fantastic Four?
Yeah.
Yep.
I watched it.
Because okay. Steven set certain price ranges. If you get $200, we'll do this. If you set $250, we'll do this, and so on and so forth. And the top tier is Andy will watch that shitty film and we'll comment on it. And we're rapidly approaching me having to watch that shitty film.
Dance, you are my minion.
Yeah.
It is a shitty film. The beginning of it... Oh, you know what? I have issues right from the beginning. I can't even say the beginning of it. The beginning of it is better than the end, but I have issues right from the beginning.
John Wilson didn't like it. John likes everything.
He's like Mikey.
Yeah.
Mikey. He won't eat it. What is it?
He won't eat it. He hates everything.
Yeah, he won't eat it. He hates everything.
So when even John can't find anything nice to say about it, that's just, you know, that really is bottom of the barrel.
You know, they just to give a little bit, they start off with, you know, Reed Richards is very young. He's in grade school. And I feel like they mischaracterized and got it wrong right from the beginning. Not so much with him, but the way he's treated by others. I'll leave it at that. I'll let you watch it and form your own opinions of how bad it is.
No, I'll be delighted to watch it. It'll make my day.
Why do I suspect sarcasm?
Because A, I'm British, and B, you're smart.
Well, A.
Oh, we got a thing the other day. We've got to start teaching British values to our students, you know, because of this indoctrination into terrorism and stuff. And I said, what is that? To fight for indifferent sarcasm and a good cup of tea.
I'm sure that was greeted by such joy. But
it was, but it's such a... What do you want me to teach that? The power to apologize? To have a floppy fringe as good as Hugh Grant's? This is what you want me to incorporate into my lesson plans now. The ability to go, oh, well, the Partridge family said it best.
Why can't you do that? Actually.
I can imagine my kids' faces if I launch into a Hugh Grant impression. They probably don't even know who he is.
Have we gotten to the point where Hugh Grant is too old now? Kids to know who he is? I guess
probably.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess so. It's just a sign of how old we are.
Yeah.
Because to me, he's Johnny come lately.
Have you seen The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
I haven't seen it yet. I have it. Mm-hmm. I actually have it, but I haven't watched it.
It's very good. It's a nice 60s little spy flick homage. The story's not up to much. It's carried by purely on Henry Cavill's charm. And it is one of those things where you go, why was he not allowed to be like this in Superman?
I'm wondering if we're going to... I don't know if we're going to see more of the charming Henry Cavill in Superman v. Batman.
I don't think... I mean, the Clark Kent scene looks promising, which is the only bit we've seen of it, where Lex introduced him to Bruce Wayne. That looks quite... that looks good.
I got to say, I don't like the casting of Lex as a... I don't even know what you'd call him, but he's just annoying. You know, they had talked about Bryan Cranston being Lex Luthor, and I love that idea. Mm. But we're not Bruce getting. Willis would have we're getting like a preteen Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Well,
I get what they're doing. They're doing Steve Jobs-ish, aren't they?
Was Steve Jobs that smarmy?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Never met the man. Can't answer that question.
No, I'm talking. I'm talking even his public persona. I really didn't even see interviews with him, but I just don't imagine. I imagine him being more professional than the what we see in that in that trailer. I don't know.
Well, I don't know.
That's my biggest criticism.
Going, trying to do a take on. I mean, if they're going by a
you've done Strange Tales Annual 2.
Yep. Well, that was Scott's. That was Scott's.
To the download. That is one of the all-time worst comics I have ever read.
Well, we rated it highly.
Really?
What? Are you posted on Facebook?
I posted. I just posted this week's Bins episode while we were talking.
Oh, that's what we did. I couldn't remember what we did.
This is the I've fallen and I can't get up episode, Bill.
Yes, there's a another. Believe it or not, Andy, there's another embarrassing Dr. Bill story in this episode.
I can't believe for a second that you have any left.
Oh, I've got plenty.